You're listening to The Dead Prussian, a podcast about war and warfare.
Big Carl highlights that the nature of war endures and the character of war changes. Well, that is my simplified interpretation of the old fellow's point. One thing I've noticed about my simplification is that there seems to be a lot of talk of new types of wars, hybrid war, grey zone conflict. In fact, even old types of wars can be a little tough to line up with this maxim. Where does the medieval chevauchée fit in? What about counterinsurgency warfare? It can be quite confusing. So today, I've called someone who can help. I have called Professor Antulio J. Echevarria II of the United States Army War College. Antulio has been the editor of the U.S. Army War College Quarterly since 2013. Prior to that, he was the Director of Research for the U.S. Army War College. He's the author of Reconsidering the American Way of War, Clausewitz and Contemporary War, Imagining Future War, and After Clausewitz. He's also published extensively in scholarly and professional journals on topics related to military history and theory and strategic thinking. He's a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy, the U.S. Army Command and General Staff College, the U.S. Army War College, and was a visiting research fellow at Oxford University. He holds MA and PhD degrees in history from Princeton University, and is currently working on a book on military strategy for Oxford University Press. Hi, Antulio. Thanks for appearing on the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Nick.
Now, you are currently the editor of the U.S. Army War College Quarterly Parameters and previously held the position as Director of Research at the U.S. Army War College. Can you tell our readers a little bit about yourself, how you got interested in your field, and what you're currently focusing on?
Sure. I am actually a retired Army officer, U.S. Army. I was in the Armor Branch initially and then became an Army strategist and had a tour inside the Pentagon and various other places. Currently working on a sixth book. I finished the book on military strategy for Oxford, so that's in their hands now, going through the final prep before it goes into publication. So I'm working on a sixth book on basically looking at Carl von Clausewitz's theory of the nature of war and comparing that to U.S. strategic thinking through the 20th century. I'm asking the question of, to what extent does U.S. strategic thinking take into account the various elements that Clausewitz describes in his Trinity, and whether it matters if they do or not into the outcome of the conflict. So, and those variables are, you know, hostility, chance, and purpose. And perhaps we'll go into those with more detail in the interview here.
I think it's quite fortuitous that you happen to be working on a book from the perspective of Big Carl and the American Way of War at the moment. We aim to discuss war and warfare here on this show quite a bit. In fact, it says so on our logo, so if we didn't aim to do that, it would be done for false advertising. One of the concepts he discussed on war was the enduring nature of war. Are you able to outline this concept for our listeners?
Yeah, I think really the emphasis is on war's changeable character or changeable nature, as opposed to its enduring nature. And by that, I mean the elements he talks about, hostility, purpose, and chance, are meant to show that war's nature changes. It can change fundamentally. It's more than a chameleon. You know, a chameleon only changes its exterior. Its interior organs remain the same. But Clausewitz is trying to tell us that war's interior dynamics and structures also change. So one example that he used in 1812, before he left Prussian service to join the Russian army and continue to fight against Napoleon, as he tried to explain to the king and any of those who would listen or read his testimony, his Bekenntnis Denkschrift, in 1812, I say the attack might have been stronger than the defense during the era of Frederick the Great. But since the wars of Napoleon and the rise of the nation in arms, levy en masse, all those things, now that you can put an entire nation in arms, the defense has become stronger than the attack. We're trying to say that the nature of war itself completely changed, which means that the principles by which we fight must change as well and adapt to whatever that new nature is. So our principles of war will only be as good as the nature of war at any particular time. And it's up to us to understand what that nature is and try to determine whether the principles we're following are still valid. So, you know, the 9 or 10 principles of war, principles of operations that are kind of in vogue within Western militaries these days, would be something that would be worth testing against what we think the nature of war is. And for Clausewitz, the nature of war was not dependent on technology per se. It really had to do with deep and vast social changes. And he takes us through sort of a history of warfare from late antiquity, from the Roman era, all the way through to his own time, and describes how these elements, these three elements that I talked about, change and what that means for the way wars were conducted, how the purpose of war was able to be fulfilled or not based on some of the other changes that occurred within society, how involved the civilian population might be in the waging of war. So a modern day example would be, is a small, you know, all volunteer force such as the U.S. military, to what extent is that drawing from the strengths of the population when it goes to war? To what extent is that military not isolated per se from the local or the larger populace, but to what extent is it semi-independent in the way it is used by political leaders? And there's a lot of debate out there over whether we have allowed the U.S. military to become too professional, too small, and too easy for policymakers to use, instead of them relying on diplomacy more and other forms of expressing national power besides military might. So it's still an important issue for us today, even though we're talking nearly 200 years ago that Clausewitz was wrestling with these concepts. So we can say from one standpoint, to get back to your issue of the enduring nature of war, we can say that these elements themselves are, which you should expect to find them in every war, and that's maybe the enduring part of it, is that those elements are there. But they vary in intensity, and their implications change over time as well for policy and all of that. If I can use an analogy of the weather, all of the elements that go into the weather are always going to be there. You're always going to have barometric pressure, you're going to have humidity, wind speed, and all of that. But the way those variables change over time mean you can have something from a nice balmy summer day when everything, temperatures are all even keel, and you can have the other extreme where you've got a massive storm. And it's important to know what you're getting into, which weather is going to confront you if you're heading out on a mission. So if you're a military force, it's good to know what the nature of the thing is you're about to embark upon, so you can prepare properly and develop your strategies accordingly and everything else. So I think the real world implications of a theory of the Dead Prussian are still important today, even though the terminology might be different, and even though he's much more difficult for us to get access to because of the language, you know, in which he wrote, not only German, but the much older form of German, and the constructs and models he was using to try to explain his theories are in some ways opaque to us today and very difficult to understand. So
I take it that predicting a future war is much like predicting the weather for the weather person on TV. You can sort of tell the viewers that there's definitely going to be weather. It might look like this, and then their gardens are swamped the next day.
Right. Yeah, it is like forecasting, or, you know, it's not predicting per se, you're forecasting, so you're giving a general idea what to expect weather-wise. And by prediction, that's in, you know, that's being more specific, more detailed, and you get into lots of trouble when you try to predict something. I think but we can forecast, you know, and we might be wrong, so we have to hedge ourselves. So we can forecast what the next conflict in the Middle East might be like, because we have quite a bit of recent experience to draw from. Or that we know who the key players might be. If there's another conflict in Ukraine, for instance, if that flares up, we know what to expect in terms of certain kinds of technology that might be introduced and what the goals of either side might be and what their militaries are shaped like and how many of them are citizen soldiers per se versus contract soldiers or mercenaries even, and how that will affect the way they are deployed and what they can do. So we can forecast in general terms, but we cannot really predict, and we need to constantly hedge ourselves in case we're wrong with a backup, with some reserves, with a backup plan, and that sort of thing. So,
and I guess you could say that if the elements of the weather are the enduring nature of war, then the way that the storm forms, is this what people term as the character of war?
Yeah, to a certain extent, you're right. The character of war comes down to, for most people, it comes down to the institutions that are out there. For Clausewitz's model, to back up to those three elements, it corresponds to three major institutions. So hostility corresponds generally to the populace. Chance corresponds mainly to military forces, and the and purpose correspond mainly to the government, what political purpose it sets out for accomplishing the war. So if you take a look at each of those institutions and sub-analyze those, you've got for government, for instance, you've got democratic governments, you've got socialist governments, you've got militias which have tribal sorts of leaders, you know, heads or figures who are in control of more of an irregular sorts of troops. So you've got different political structures, all of which have certain kinds of institutions that have built in their customs and their traditions and their ways of doing things. And so to understand those changes, people talk about those as belonging to the character of war. So you could have a character of war, World War II was a very different character from the Vietnam conflict, for instance. And you could trace the differences in the institutions that were at work politically within Vietnam, North and South, the political institutions that were essentially at work or at play in the United States and its allies, and you have other institutions that were at work within China and Soviet Union who were reinforcing and supporting the North Vietnamese, for instance. So you can break it down and look at those kinds of institutions and how they've changed over time and track that as the character of war. And you can also talk about weapons and doctrine and that sort of thing as belonging to the character of war as well. A war on land, different character perhaps than war at sea, because different weapons are being used, perhaps a different kind of doctrine in terms of details is being followed as well. So it's still useful, even though Clausewitz didn't really talk much about character. I think he mentions it twice in all of the documents I've looked at. For him, it's all nature. It's a subjective nature, which is what we call character, and an objective nature, which is more deep and in some ways more general and more universal, if you will. And it gets down to the basic forces that are at work in war, the elements that I talked about earlier.
And I guess, if I used a sports analogy, you know, every sports match, let's say any code of football, follows a similar format. But what we've found, war doesn't follow the same format. Not all wars follow the same path. And I guess that character is the influencing factor on the amalgamation of all those parts of the nature of war. So my question now is, how does this concept, as you mentioned, you know, it's over 200 years ago, how does this concept fit in with the wars we've seen in the last 15 years?
One of the things that we could mention as part of the character of war that's important in this regard is the rules of engagement that are now part of every military operation or intervention that takes place. And those supersede your doctrine, and in many cases, your political objectives are closely tied to the rules of engagement, so you can only do certain things at certain times in certain ways. You would not have had that in a character of war that was closer to the era of the Cold War, for instance. They started to emerge more and more during the Cold War because of the threat of nuclear escalation. So rules of engagement were imposed. So that's a real element that now has changed the character of war. It's closely tied to the influence of international law, the law of armed conflict. All of those things now impact on the way we conduct war today much more than they would have a quarter of a century ago, for instance, or going back even further. So those are two examples of how the character of war is much different in today's wars, where your opponent does not have the same constraints and can do lots of things like beheading innocent people on the internet, for instance, in order to generate support or demonstrate power, what have you. That certainly is not permitted of any Western society, and not permitted really for any military force to do any kind of act like that. So it's lopsided. People call that asymmetric kinds of war, but asymmetry really goes back to the entire nature of war. Always asymmetrical, because one side wants something more than what the other side wants or has. So from the basic concept of war itself, there's asymmetry built into the nature of war. For instance, the attacker wants to get something from the defender. The defender just has to resist giving it to the attacker. So the attacker has to exert more force and determination to get what he or she wants than the defender has to. So that's lopsided. That's an asymmetry that's already built into the nature of war. We don't really need to use the label asymmetric, but it's become common currency. It's redundant, in my view. As are lots of the other labels, hybrid war, even gray zone war. They're redundant, but they're in vogue, so it's good to know what people are talking about when they use them, so you can participate in the conversation. But really, if we have a solid understanding of the nature of war, or at least the elements that we want to assign to the nature of war, we believe belong to the nature of war, and we have a solid understanding of that. We have a solid understanding of how we want to craft our strategies. Then it's basically all war, and we don't need as many adjectives. It just causes more and more confusion.
It's a very interesting point about the buzzwords that are going around describing war. There's been a lot of talk recently here in Australia, particularly about the term hybrid war and hybrid warfare, and how discussions about it tend to focus people maybe a little bit too much on certain aspects of current conflict. Some commentators are starting to use the term hybrid warriors rather than hybrid warfare to describe particular capabilities rather than an actual different type of conflict.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting point, this understanding the nature of war. I think myself and my listeners have definitely benefited from your explanation, because it's not something that's widely known or definitely not covered in the popular media. There's not too many media outlets that will release an episode on Karl von Clausewitz and his theories. However, we've come to the Butcher's Bill of the Dead Prussian podcast. Now, Antulio, each guest is asked to finish a sentence, and this is part of our mission on the Dead Prussian. It's part of Karl's mission when he was writing, and it is helping us frame the debate on war. I invite you, one of our most Clausewitzian of guests, to offer a definition to frame the debate on war. War is?
Yeah, I would say war is the use of force to make your opponent do your will. That force can be military. More and more these days, we're using not just military force, but lots of other force in conjunction. So we're using economic force, informational operations, or are you persuasive sort of force. So it's the traditional definition used to be the use of military force or violence to achieve a political end. That's kind of the political science definition that's been in vogue for most of the Cold War. But these days we're looking at the fact that we can be at war even if our forces are not shooting at each other, but we are applying other kinds of force. Maybe cyber power comes into play in that, for instance. And you can be at war, maybe in a cyber dimension, even if you're at peace or cooperating in other dimensions. And it's important to understand, for us to be able to understand that mix and match kind of character, that politics today, as politics in ancient times, can be very convoluted. You can have people cooperating on one front, but in competition, violent competition perhaps, on another front, and this is almost sort of normal as far as politics are concerned. That's my contribution to the definition right now. That would not be, lawyers would have a fit over that probably, because they want to define it much more strictly, and then you have to, in some cases, you have to get UN approval before you can do a military intervention, for instance, or so you need to appeal to international law, you need to follow the law of armed conflict, and there's legal definitions that come into play whether you are at war or not. But for a strategist, I think we need a broader definition so that we can look at all of the instruments available to us and think about ways to use them to gain the kind of leverage and positioning we want to gain vis-a-vis our rivals. It's fine for the lawyers to be lawyers. It's fine for instructors to be instructors. But for strategists who have to constantly work around ways to achieve advantages over opponents, we need a broader definition. We can't limit ourselves just to the use of military force.
I think the application of broad definitions for a show such as this is quite beneficial as well. So I thank you for a broad definition, because it gives myself a lot of scope for debate in both discussing this episode when we release it with our listeners, and also in terms of lining up guests. You've just opened the way for me to grab some information operations specialists, maybe some economists even, although I'm not sure how much fun interviewing economists will actually be.
Yeah, no. Right, and financial warfare is a subset of economic warfare, and that can get very technical very quickly, so I wish you good luck with that. It's important to do, I think, just kind of selecting the right person or asking them to speak, in general terms so that the general audience can understand what they're talking about.
Yeah, my audience happens to be quite general, although that's not necessarily an insult to all of them, just the few that I know who listen to the show. Antilio, thank you very much for coming on the show. I really do appreciate you appearing on the show. I know that you've taken some time out of a very busy schedule, particularly this week. And what I think our listeners will definitely benefit from is the simple explanations you've given to what is, as you've said, written in rather archaic German, and something that is often not always well explained to the non-academic listener. So thank you very much for coming on the show.
You bet, Mick. Thanks a lot, and good luck with that little one.
Yeah, well, hopefully it'll all go well this week. For those listeners that don't know, this is the arrival of the Dead Prussian host, child number 2, this week. So I'm actually on standby, sitting next to a night bag as I record this with Antulio. Now, listeners, thank you very much for all the support you've given me. There's been plenty of iTunes reviews, and there's been plenty of support over social media, so I thank you very much for the efforts you've put in. But until next time, grab a book and crack on.
Join the conversation with us on Twitter at Dead Prussian Pod, on Facebook at The Dead Prussian Page, or on our website www.thedeadprussian.com. All show notes for this episode, as well as copyright information, can be found on the website. The Dead Prussian Podcast is written, produced and hosted by Mick Cook. It is co-produced by Amanda Levito. The music used throughout is Caught in the Beat by Broke for Free and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. All opinions expressed by individuals on the podcast are those of the individual and not necessarily representative of any other organisation.